If you were to describe our current culture in one word, what would it be? The options are many. And a good argument could be probably made for many of them. But I think I find myself in agreement with Eugene Peterson when he writes, "We live in a nation of complainers and a society of addicts. Everywhere we turn, we hear complaints. I can't spend the money the way I want. I can't spend the time the way I want. I can't be myself. I'm under the control of others all the time." And everywhere we meet the addicts, addicted to alcohol, drugs, compulsive work habits, and to obsessive consumption. A society of addicts. That's the way he summarized our culture. Maybe history will remember this as the age of addiction. Now, I'm not suggesting that we somehow invented addictive behavior. That's been around since Adam and Eve. But we seem to have taken it to a higher level. There was a time when addiction or addict was reserved for the abuse of alcohol and drugs, but now we recognize compulsive behavior toward overeating, gambling, smoking, pornography. The list goes on and on. So, well, what do you mean by addiction? One resource defines the word as any thinking or behavior that is habitual, repetitious, and very difficult or impossible to control regardless of the consequences. That's what addiction is all about. It goes on to add, perhaps it is not surprising that addictions have become a major health hazard worldwide and have been called the greatest threat to our nation's health. Now, when we talk about addictions, it's very easy to see how these addictions can be harmful. But there's one particular addiction that doesn't seem to get the negative attention of some of those other ones. And that is the addiction to work. In fact, a new term has been coined in our vocabulary, the workaholic. The one who works and works and works and just can't seem to stop. But in fact, work has become a respectable idol in our society. A person can sacrifice everything else, their family, their friends, even their personal health, on the altar of work and actually be praised for it. Be rewarded for showing commitment, determination, and the right stuff. And I think that is a profound tragedy. Now, work was intended by God as a wonderful means of serving Him. God Himself is a worker. We see Him at work in creation. We see Him continue to work to this day. He has created us in His image to be a worker. But work was never meant to become an end in itself. And certainly not an idol. Our work may express who we are, but it was never meant to become who we are. So this morning, on this Labor Day weekend, I'd like to address the stress fracture of overwork and fatigue. I dare say that among Christians, workaholism is accepted. It's even sometimes expected. Just this past week, I read in a resource that I normally trust, "The knowledge of this demand for diligent labor spurs the excellent minister to serious efforts." No wonder Henry Martin, the missionary to India, exclaimed, "Now let me burn out for God." Because of his diligent hard work as a missionary to the American Indians, David Brainerd was dead before he reached the age of 30. Ministers of God are engaged in an eternal work with the destiny of men's souls at stake. The urgency of that work drives them on through weariness, loneliness, and struggle. J. Oswald Sanders wrote, "If he is unwilling to pay the price of fatigue for his leadership, it will always be mediocre. True leadership always exacts a heavy toll on the whole man, and the more effective his leadership is, the higher the price to be paid." I was exhausted just reading it. And as I read that, I'm thinking to myself, is that really what we want to be about? But I fear that it's true that the Christian's primary source of identity is fast becoming his or her occupation. If you meet somebody for the first time, right after you give them your name, you probably talk about what you do for a living, right? Or you might ask them, what do they do for a living? And to add the ultimate pressure, we operate under the old banner, you aren't really serving the Lord unless you consistently push yourself to the point of fatigue. I mean, isn't that what that paragraph was that I just read? It's that tired yet proud sounding, I'd rather burn out than rust out line. You know what the problem with that thinking is? Either way, you're out. And is that really what God wants us to be? Does He want us to burn out? I'm sure He doesn't want us to rust out, but does He really want us out of the picture? Chuck Swindoll goes on to say, we've been programmed to think that fatigue is next to godliness. That the more exhausted we are, and look, the more spiritual we are and the more we earn God's smile of approval. We bury all thoughts of enjoying life, for we all know that committed, truly committed Christians are those who work, 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 and work some more, preferably with great intensity. As a result, we have become a generation of people who worship our work, who work at our play, and who play at our worship. It's that first phrase and that final line I want to consider today. People who worship their work. As silly as that may sound, it's a reality for far too many in our culture today and for far too many in our churches today. We have worked ourselves to a frazzle, and it has taken a toll on our relationships and on our health. Fatigue, overwork, is a major stress fracture for many. Well, how do you know if you've fallen into that subtle addiction of a workaholic? What are the symptoms of this respectable idol? Some of the milder symptoms would include chronic muscle tension, resulting in sore neck, shoulders, and back, as well as constant tension headaches. Disturbance of the digestive system, resulting in chronic diarrhea, colitis, diverticulitis, ulcers, constipation. Chronic sleeplessness, including the difficulty in falling asleep as well as waking up early. Persistent fatigue, especially if you wake up tired every morning. A loss of enthusiasm for life. A lack of excitement or interest in normal activities. These might be warning signs. Now, if you go beyond that, the next step would include intense depression for maybe 3 days to a week that occurs every few months. Unusual difficulty getting going in the morning. Being overcome by great tiredness whenever there is a letdown in your schedule. Strange body sensations like tingling up and down the arms or strange aches in joints and muscles. Exhaustion that occurs frequently or very easily. Or feelings of panic that's triggered by activity. Some folks, when they get really into it, they have panic attacks. And they don't know why. It could simply be exhaustion. Here are some questions to ask to see if this is a problem area for you. Do I feel that my work is the main source of my identity? Do I dive into details and lists but have difficulty starting essentials? Do I have difficulty pacing my time? Do I have difficulty being satisfied with the final result of my work? Do I feel that my work is controlling me? Do I make sure that others know how much and how long I work? Do I resent others for not working as hard as I think they should? Do I feel guilty when I relax or have fun? Do I often feel fatigued? Do I put work over those who are closest to me? Do I primarily talk about my occupation? Do I fear others might think that I don't work hard enough? Do I have difficulty saying no when people ask me to do things? Do I feel that the more I work, the more I will please God? Do I have more devotion to my work than to the Lord? Those are some tough questions. Questions I think we need to seriously consider. And if we answer yes to a number of those, we may suffer from workaholism. You say, what is that? Well, it's the compulsion to overwork in order to gain self-esteem. And I think that's an important aspect of it. It's not just the fact that we work so much and that we work so hard. It's why are we doing it? And I think for many people it is this idea of self-image, self-esteem. I feel good about myself because of what I do. Now, there is nothing wrong with enjoying our work. I think God made us as workers and we should enjoy our work. The book of Ecclesiastes tells us there's nothing better than for a man to enjoy his work that God has given him. There's not a problem with that. The problem comes in is that when we wrap up our identity in what we do rather than who we are, we're in for trouble. Particularly if something interrupts that. If we get laid off. If we lose our job, maybe the plant closes down. Or we experience an injury or an illness that keeps us from working. Do we then feel worthless? For many people, the answer to that would be yes. We often get involved with our work so much because we feel good about ourselves and we want others to feel good about us. And unlike alcoholics or some of the other addictions that are out there, overworkers are respected in society. They're encouraged to continue that, usually by their co-workers. Yeah, keep working, so now we don't have to. But it is something that generally is encouraged. Now, I read something from Brian Robinson, now, not the Brian Robinson that's here today. Different Brian Robinson. He is a self-proclaimed former workaholic. And he studies this whole thing of those who overwork. And he writes, work addicts often have thicker denial systems than those suffering from other addictions because overwork is rewarded at every level in our society, especially in corporate America. Work addiction destroys relationships and kills people. Do you hear that? Work addiction destroys relationships and kills people. Amid praise and cheers, marriages break, friendships dissolve, work effectiveness ebbs, and physical side effects and health problems appear. No one, least of all the compulsive worker, understands what went wrong. Amidst their crumbling world, work addicts drown their sorrows by rolling up their sleeves and digging their heels deeper into their jobs. You see, for workaholics, work is more than making a living. It is life itself. They live to work. Work consumes their thoughts and cuts them off from people. Their personhood meshes with their job. Without their job, they're nothing. To succeed is to be worthwhile. To fail is to be worthless. Now, the problem with that approach to work is that it ultimately does not satisfy. We might think that if we are a success on the job, that's going to be it. I'm going to feel good about myself. I'm going to mean something in society. I'll be a meaningful part of my community. But it doesn't work that way. I mentioned earlier the book of Ecclesiastes. If you're not familiar with that Old Testament book, I'll give you the Reader's Digest condensed version. Solomon, who was the king, had virtually everything at his disposal. God had blessed him with riches, with success, with everything that he could want. So he decided to do a little experiment. He said, I'm going to try to find the purpose of life, true meaning in life, in everything except God. And so he went out and he launched these projects. He thought maybe money would make him happy. So he amassed all the money that he could, but it really didn't satisfy. He thought maybe if I really applied myself to learning and tried to figure it all out intellectually, I would come to the meaning of life. But that proved meaningless. Then he thought, maybe I'm taking life too seriously. I need to laugh more. So he brought in the comedians and the actors and musicians and wanted to amuse himself. And it was okay for a while, but again, it just didn't satisfy. Well, one of the things that he tried in this whole project was work. And in chapter 2 of Ecclesiastes, we read, I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself, the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired men and women singers and a harem as well, the delights of the heart of man. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward for all my labor. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind, nothing was gained under the sun. He continues in verse 17 of the same chapter, so I hated life, because the work done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether he'll be a wise man or a fool. Yet he will have control over all the work into which I poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over my toilsome labor under the sun. For a man may do his work with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then he must leave all he owns to someone else who hasn't worked for it. This too is meaningless and a great misfortune. What does a man get for all the toil and anxious striving with which he labors under the sun? All his days, his work is pain and grief. Even at night, his mind does not rest. This too is meaningless. Boy, that last verse just jumps out, especially for the workaholic. All my days, my work is pain and grief. Even at night, my mind does not rest. See, when we're overworked, when we're exhausted and fatigued, irritation sets in. And following close on the heels of that irritation comes confusion, a loss of vision, burnout, sometimes even the loss of family. Legendary football coach Vince Lombardi has said, "Fatigue makes cowards of us all." And physical exhaustion alters our emotional state. What we could handle when fresh now causes us to buckle at the knees. The challenges that once energized us now terrify us. Now, the presenting symptom on such occasions, this is emotional, but the real problem is physical. We have drained ourselves of our energy. See, when we're worn out, the words, I am so tired of, just comes off of our lips. We're tired of problems, tired of pressure, tired of deadlines, tired of criticism, tired of working 6 or 7 days a week, tired of difficult people, tired of having everything depend on me, tired of the same place, the same thing. And I'll tell you, just personally, the thing that I've been saying an awful lot lately is, I'm tired of being tired. It happens. While what we feel the problem is what comes at the end of the phrase, in reality, the word tired is the true explanation for that urge to give in. And if left unchecked, work can steal everything precious in our lives. It'll steal our minds. Can't focus on anything else. It'll steal our presence. We miss important events in our family's lives. It'll steal our identity because we become our job. It steals our significance. Like machines, our purpose in life is nothing but work. It steals our health. The enormous stress wears out our bodies. It steals our energy. We have nothing left to give to the important people in our lives. And then finally, it steals our priorities because achievement becomes our God. This idea of overwork, fatigue to the point of exhaustion, it's a serious stress fracture in the lives of many, including Christians. But fortunately, there's an answer to this issue, and it comes right out of the pages of Scripture. What can we do about this? What can we do about the stress fracture of workaholism? I think we need to do three things. We need to reevaluate our perspectives. We need to rearrange our priorities. We need to reorganize our practices. First, let's reevaluate our perspectives. We need to check our motivation. Why am I working so hard? Why do I have to work 6 or 7 days a week? Why do I have to put in all of the hours of overtime? Am I trying to prove my worth to someone, maybe even myself? Have we convinced ourselves that if we don't do it, it just won't get done? Maybe we've gotten caught up in the materialistic rat race. We're trying to keep up with the Joneses. You know, every new electronic piece of equipment that comes out, we got to have. Or maybe it's the car or the bike, or whatever it might be. And in order to fuel that, got to have money, got to keep working, got to put in the hours. Have we convinced ourselves that tiredness is next to godliness? That it's better to wear out than to rust out? It's easy to believe that we have to work ourselves to the bone in order to prove our worth or to make sure the job gets done right. You know, guys, I think for us in particular, it really plays to our pride. I just was thinking about this. There's a book on the back that I published a few years ago called The Subtle Sides of Pride. If I ever republish this, I'm going to have to add a chapter. And it's going to be The Sin of Indispensability. We convince ourselves that we're indispensable. We have to do it. Nobody else is going to. Well, first of all, sometimes if it won't get done otherwise, just don't let it not get done. See if the world ends. Probably won't. Or you'll be amazed that if you say no, somebody else will actually step up and do it. Now, that might be a blow to the pride, but maybe that's a blow that our pride needs. We've got to be careful that we don't think of ourselves more highly than we ought to think. Solomon writes in one of the passages we read earlier, in Psalm 127, "Unless the Lord builds the house, the work of the builders is wasted. Unless the Lord protects a city, guarding it with sentries will do no good." I love verse 2. "It is useless for you to work so hard from early morning until late at night, anxiously working for food to eat." Why? "For God gives rest to His loved ones." So we need to stop putting all of the pressure on ourselves to perform and to provide. We need to allow God to be God. Now, I'm not saying that we can just kick back and say, "Okay, God, you do all the work and I'll just sit back and enjoy it." That's not how we were designed. But we have to reevaluate our perspective and realize that God wants us to do what we can, but He doesn't call us to do it all. We also need to revisit this concept that our spirituality is measured by our exhaustion. David Roper puts it well when he writes, "Busyness is not a Christian virtue. Spiritual maturity is not measured by the amount of work we do, no matter how busy we're, what we're busy doing or how much we get done. There is more to the Christian life than increasing its speed. I like that. There's more to the Christian life than increasing its speed. In fact, God designed us to take a break from the work routine on a regular basis. And this was something that goes all the way back to the very beginning. This was God's idea. He created the universe in 6 days. He rested on the seventh. Now, He wasn't exhausted. He's God. But He was setting an example for His creation. When God created Adam and Eve, He gave them a job to do. And I want you to notice that work is not a part of the curse of sin. Work was established before that. Now, work got harder because of the curse. God created us to work, but He also created us to rest. He designed that one day a week to take a break. You see, work in balance with physical rest is a life that is in sync with God's design. And not only does He provide for physical rest, but He also invites us to emotional and spiritual rest. He tells us to release our cares and our anxieties to Him. It's not all dependent upon us, because we are dependent upon God. And God does not value us because of what we do or how much we do it. God values us because of who we are. You are valuable to God simply for the fact that He created you. And if you are His in Jesus Christ, you are His child. That's what makes the difference. Now, I'm sure that any of you that have had children, as they grow up and get out on their own and they find their place in the work world, you feel proud of them when they reach their accomplishments, they reach their goals. But if something were to happen, if they were to lose a job, or if they were to embark on a career and it didn't work out, would they be any less your child? Of course not. You don't love them because of what they do. You love them because they're your child. Do you think God treats us any differently? Do you think God only cares about us for what we can do for Him? That's all backwards, because it's always what God does for us comes first. You know, it's popular these days to debunk the Sabbath as being an Old Testament idea that we Christians don't have to follow. And I'll agree that the strict regulations that got added to the Sabbath principle, no, we don't have to follow those. You're right. But we do read in Hebrews 4, verses 9 and 10, "There remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from his own work, just as God did from His." Now, I realize that in our society, some folks can't take Sunday or Saturday off due to their work schedule. What I'm suggesting, though, is that we take some day off during the week, whatever day that might be. Take it off from the usual work routine. Don't think of this as wasted time. Think of it as invested time that's going to reap dividends in the future. I think we also need to rearrange our priorities. Jesus said in Luke 12:15, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." Well, we need to hear that in our generation. I mean, people today think that he who dies with the most toys wins, right? That's what pushes many people. I like the bumper sticker that I saw in response to that. "He who dies with the most toys, still dead." Solomon would add to that, someone else is going to play with your toys. So many people are convinced that they have to work two jobs or a ton of overtime just to survive. But how much of what we're working for is really all that necessary? Maybe if we took time to rest, to refresh ourselves, we would enjoy what we have even more. Paul warned in 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 through 10, godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we'll be content with that. People who want to get rich fall in temptation and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and have pierced themselves with many griefs. You know, I've read that passage before. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap, into many foolish and harmful desires. Being a workaholic fits that verse. Work ourselves to death for what? For things that we aren't going to be able to enjoy. Contentment can have a powerful effect on our work habits and have an impact on our health. Then finally, we need to reorganize our practices. We need to see the benefits, really the necessity of regularly taking time away from our normal work routine in order to rest and be refreshed. Jesus at one time sent his disciples out on a preaching mission. When they came back, they were so excited about all the things they had done. And Jesus suggested that they take some time off for rest. As Vance Havner used to say, if we don't come apart and rest, we'll just come apart. Come apart at the seams. And you know, leisure is more than idle time not devoted to paid occupations. Some of the most valuable work done in the world has been done at leisure and never paid for in cash. Leisure is free activity. Labor is compulsive activity. In leisure, we do what we like. In labor, we do what we must. We lift ourselves above the grit and grind of mere existence. You know, it's interesting that the word leisure, it comes from a Latin word, licere, which means to be permitted. And if we're ever going to include leisure as a regular part of our lives, we have to give ourselves permission to do so. It's okay to relax and not feel guilty. It's okay to sleep in one day a week, preferably not Sunday. It's okay to take some time away from the day-to-day routine. Of course, the bottom line in doing all this is actually doing it. We can all nod in agreement till we turn blue, but our greatest need is not inclination, it's demonstration. So here's two suggestions that'll help. I'll close with this. First of all, stop being absorbed with the endless details of life. Jesus said in Matthew 6, don't worry about your life. Don't worry about what you're going to eat or what you're going to wear. Let God provide for you. Take your mind off of the anxiety. Each day, deliberately decide not to allow worry to steal our time and our energy. Don't convince yourself that it's all up to you. Remember, God has made promises in His Word to provide. And then secondly, consciously take time for leisure. God created the world, He rested. And we are commanded to imitate Him. We need to take a break. It may not only make our lives longer in the process, which it will, but we'll find that we enjoy life a whole lot more.